It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. In the center of our service, in the center of our lives, let us make room for life's quieter sides. We may use these first moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here.
Please join me in an attitude of prayer. Let us give thanks for the fruits of love. Let us especially, this Thanksgiving, show our gratitude for the fruits of tough love. Let us thank the people whose words or actions in our lives took some courage and helped us change for the better. People who called us to serve higher ideals than we wanted to serve, let us thank them. People who made our world safer and more humane by their own service of high and compassionate ideals, especially when it took some courage. Let us thank them and let us emulate their devotion and their courage. Just as the meanness of a small spirit can make our world meaner, so can the greatness of a large and loving spirit give us more life. Let us give thanks to those who have offered us and our world the gift of life and a caring embrace. Life is the breathing in and breathing out of compassion and gratitude, acts of grace and acts of thanks. Let us become parts of this pulse of life, this Thanksgiving, by doing things for which others can be thankful and by thanking those who do them for us. Let this be our Thanksgiving prayer and our calling this week and every week. Amen.
Today, I consider today as the time when the winter holiday season really begins. It starts out on a simple note with the rituals of Thanksgiving. We give thanks for the presence of community and celebrate with food and stories. It involves, of course, an awful lot of stress, a lot of extra work on top of everything. And then there we are in an unaccustomed place, spending quality time with people we may have not seen for some time. For those of us who spend that time with extended families, it's the extra closeness that reminds us of why we love them and also why occasionally we have a little difficulty in loving them. We find that we revert to some extent to a much younger age as we go through this time. And this can hold true whether we spend that time with family of origin or whether we spend that time with families who we have chosen to be with. It can remind us also of painful realities like deaths, divorces, and other tragedies in our family, as well as old hurts that we're still holding on to, which, if we stay with each other long enough, will inevitably surface. There is nothing like being with family to stir things up. Even those of us who celebrate without that larger gathering, it can be a reminder of why that is, that we are spending our time without that gathering. Now, I believe that we are compelled by a primal human instinct to give thanks. That whether we come from an amazing abundance or we come from simply that we have survived tough times, that we need those rituals of thanksgiving. Despite whatever commercial, religious, or political agendas are served in this time, especially the gross national product, These rituals would wither up and die if there was not something in there for us besides taking care of that. These things are what we need. Now, reflecting on our blessings can be risky business because our blessings are usually mixed. They usually come all embroiled with everything else, and those whose feelings are running a little too high may decide that eating way more food than they actually need in their bodies is a really good thing because it kind of helps numb the feelings. Chocolate is mine. Chocolate, may you be blessed. Now, I believe that rituals don't have to be big affairs that rabbis and ministers and such have invented for us to go through. But it can be private or done with a few others. It can be as simple as taking a breath and being thankful that we can breathe. As we remember probably one time or another in our life when we were having a difficulty in breathing. It can be enjoying washing dishes after dinner. Now I currently have a dishwasher to help, but there's still some dishes that always need to be that don't go into the dishwasher. And so I can soak my hands in that warm, soapy water and remember those days when my family sang in perfect harmony. Unusual. But in perfect harmony, sang rounds with each other as we finished the dishes together. It can be a ritual of taking the dog for a walk and enjoying the dog's obvious joy in that exercise and enjoying the crisp fall or winter air as we do that. It can be as simple as teaching a child something that you know really well to do, a simple thing like, well, in my family, it was learning how to tie knots for going fishing. But in watching the child gain a new skill and have pride in that and knowing that that's something that goes into the future with them. In the New York Times, Susan Schnur shared a story about a time she was with her boyfriend's family, and in the, I don't know if it, what season it was, but she said that at one point she was lying downstairs in the downstairs area, trying to sleep and not doing very well, but just being very quiet. And in the middle of the night, the father came down, cut himself a slab of bread, obviously thinking that she was sleeping, and then he stood at the dining room window for a while looking out. Then finally, he began a ritual of Thanksgiving, an amazing private ritual. And as he did it, he used different words for bread all the way through, different languages. She had no idea that there were that many languages that used bread, the word bread. But he would thrust the bread up, take it to his breast, shake it, kiss it, and then take a bite. And he did this, saying bread all the way through each ritual, until his hands were empty. And then he went upstairs and went back to bed. She goes on to say that even on an ordinary day, he appeared to be stunned by his own happiness. He met that with this extravagant ritual of thanks for the simple gift of bread. Now, we have bread that we can give thanks for. We have air to breathe. We have water to drink, the real basic essentials for life on this planet. Surely that calls for some reflection, and it calls for gratitude. As for those who have lived lives of trauma and great difficulty, it can stun us when they still manage to live their lives in this way. I was working in a hospital in Massachusetts, and it was before email, and the transporter tubes that they had, you couldn't send some of the specimens through them. So we had messengers, and this one young man who had cerebral palsy was one of the messengers. He was in his wheelchair. He wheeled around, taking things here and there. and he made friends wherever he went. Now, if you took a little bit of time, he was hard to understand, but if you took a little bit of time and listened well, you could understand him. And you began to see that he was an intelligent, witty, and kind person. He told me, every once in a while, just out of the blue, he told me, you know, life is good. He had the audacity to give thanks in the middle of something that we might think of as woe. So what are the things that we live with that may get in the way of us being grateful? Is it our weight in a culture that is obsessed with thinness? Is it that we are outside of those very narrow current models of what it means to be a male or a female in this culture? Are we not interested in the work that we should be that would bring us a lot more respect and a lot more money? Do we have physical or mental conditions that allow others to treat us in a way that is less than human? Do our sexual realities, our race, our gender, put us in the way of possibly being attacked? As we grow older, is the world changing perhaps a little too fast for us, and we long for the days when we knew where everything was? Or are we coming from a new sensibility which is yet to emerge in the world? Are we too young? Are we too old? Do we have to share our life with half-truths because of experiences that would make others pity or scorn us? Do we have more passion than is currently acceptable in this world? There are so many ways that we can feel not part of this world and not feel grateful. We need rituals to move out of those things. I think that's part of the thing they're for, is to move us out of those looking at the negatives. What are some of the rituals that you have? I have one, an old one that I am reclaiming. I tried to get rid of it when I was trying to do better with my diet, but I have a comfort ritual with having to do with peanut butter. And it involves butter, which astonishes people. I do butter, and there's a sequence. There's butter, slabs of butter, and then there's a big gob of peanut butter, and then there's big gob of jam. The vehicle, the bread or the crackers or whatever, is not the important thing. It's the stuff in the middle that is really, really important. And I had forgotten why I love to do that. Now, since I've regained that was actually one of the things, one of the few times that my mother would feed me between meals was when she decided that for some reason or other the peanut butter sandwich was called for. And so I held that one for a long time. Now that I know what it is, I can the quantities of the food can go down a little bit. But I still do have the peanut butter as an essential food group in my pantry. Do we do them fully present? Do we do these rituals fully present and cognizant of what they are? Or do we do them sometimes as routine and we kind of forget? Are you naming and reclaiming old rituals? Or are you inventing new ones with yourself and with those around you to take the place of the ones that don't work anymore? As a community, obviously, we have rituals. This is the one we do every Sunday. We come to this place to remember who we are and what we are grateful for, as well as what the work is that we need to do out in the world. We hope that our rituals will take us to those places. And if they don't, we hope that we will have the courage to throw them out and make new ones. Since I have found Unitarian Universalism, I have discovered a level of gratitude that every single day I know that there is a community, whether I'm in their presence or not, that sustains me that holds my values in their hearts. I want to thank all of you for being part of that community, another place where I can be sustained. And I want to do a gesture of gratitude for that. Gracias. Danke. Wadu. That's Cherokee. Merci. Thank you.
I think there should be an official category called tough thanks. It's the thanks you do in response to having received tough love that you didn't want, but that you look back on later and decided it changed your life for the better. In religion, this is the role of prophets. This is what prophets are. They're not priests. They're not part of the church. They don't care what you believe. They don't care about your creed, your rituals. They don't care about any of it. My favorite of the prophets, old Amos, came running in from the field one day. No one knew a thing about him. And he starts yelling at all these people. And he says, "Hey, you people are hypocrites. You talk sweet talk about God, and then you treat one another like dirt. God hates that." Then he runs back out into the hills, and you never hear from him again. It was one of the prophets that first came up with the saying, "Speak the truth, but ride a fast horse." I can't imagine that anyone ever liked any of these prophet people coming in. And yet, when you study the religion, when you read the scriptures, those are the people that you pick out to be grateful for. Those are the people that you say, here were the voices that raised everyone, whether they liked it or not, back up to the higher callings they were supposed to be doing. Thank God for them. That's tough thanks that comes in return for tough love. Usually, you may notice, it comes a lot later than the tough love. What's it mean to make a positive difference in the world? I have a mental image of this that I have had since 1989. It's the image of the Chinese student standing there in front of the tank in Tiananmen Square. This is my image of someone standing up to something bad in the name of something good. That's tough love. That tank driver, I assume, did not want to kill the student, and I suspect was grateful for an excuse not to. When a student did something that foolhardy and that dramatic to call an end to this horrid show of force. A few weeks ago, I told you a story, much less dramatic story, one a lot closer to the sort of thing we're apt to do than standing in front of tanks. I don't recommend standing in front of tanks, not real tanks anyway. But I do recommend standing up to something bad because you believe in something good. The story I told you a few weeks ago was of a young schoolgirl, 10-year-old girl on the school bus, who stood up to a bully who was picking on a boy in the seat in front of her, and she leaned over and she said, "That's mean. Quit it." And she said it until he quit it and moved to another place on the bus. That's tough love, and it deserves our thanks. That changes the world. No one on that bus who heard it will ever forget that. That's powerful stuff. That's prophetic. Sometimes it's a very easy thing to do, to just add your voice, your labor, your name to people who are trying to stand up to bad things in the name of good things. And I've tried to give you a range of choices today, from easy to fun. The easy is, I've copied out a list of over 120 activist organizations that are all standing up to different kinds of bad things in the name of different kinds of good things that share the same general values that all of us in this room share. And we made copies of it, and we put them out on that little table right outside the sanctuary. It's about a 6 or 7 page sheet in white paper. If you're interested in that, get copies of those lists. We'll also post the list on the website along with the homilies from today. One of the things that's important about that list is to realize, because we tend to think, I'm only one person, I can't do anything. Every one of those 120 organizations was started by one person and one person's passion that stood up to something bad in the name of something good. That needs to be an inspiration, because sometimes it's going to be our turn to do that, and we need all the inspirations we can get when that time comes, which is going to be in about 5 minutes here. Sometimes it's dramatic when people do this. It's easy to think back, and this is from my life, the things that stick out for me. It's easy to think back to Rosa Parks, who in 1954, she was tired. It had been a hard day, and she's just not going to move to the back of the bus. And that one act catapulted the civil rights movement into the headlines all over the world. It's amazing. I think also of Ralph Nader, because I just watched a 2-hour documentary on him, a new documentary on him. I had not realized how many changes in the world came about from that one irascible man. He stood up to General Motors. He sued them. He won. He stood up to a whole host of government organizations, and he won. I want to read you just a very short list, because this may surprise you too, of the things in our world that have changed because of that one man. Seat and shoulder belts in cars. Airbags. Improved safety standards for cars. Removing unsafe cars like the Chevy Corvair from the road. The Freedom of Information Act came because of him. The Safe Drinking Water Act. Labels of contents and warnings on foods and medicines. Many nuclear power plant safety measures. And both the Occupational Self and Health Safety and Health Organization, OSHA, and the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, both of those exist today because of Ralph Nader's work. If you remember the stories of the times, no one liked this man. This was the guy coming in from the hills screaming, "You people are treating each other like dirt. It's mean. Quit it." Thank goodness he persisted, both as a prophet and as a role model and an inspiration. I still can hear cynical voices, and I'll admit mine is sometimes among them, that say, "Yeah, but that was Rosa Parks and Ralph Nader. They were the superstars. We're just ordinary schmucks. We can't do that. Good luck ever getting a corporation to care about being green instead of making money. It isn't going to happen." I feel that way too a lot of times, but it isn't always true, and sometimes we need to remind ourselves of that. This is a good time. This week I read a story of the Frito-Lay factory in Casa Grande, Arizona, factory the size of 2 football fields, so it's fairly big. And it's doing just that. Their goal is to take their plant off the power grid as much as they can and run it almost entirely on renewable fuels and recycled water. Since 1999, Frito-Lay factories have reduced their water use by 38%, natural gas by 27%, and electricity by 21%. They're not doing this because they've become liberal tree huggers. They're doing this because someone appealed to them in the key that their own music is sung in and said, "You know, you are squandering a lot of money." Now they're saving $55 million a year in utility costs. There are a lot of reasons for doing good things, and sometimes we just have to learn the language of the people we're trying to talk to. Some companies have been even more ambitious. Toyota said it had managed to reduce energy consumption for every vehicle manufactured by more than 24% just in the last 5 years. Texas Instruments built a green semiconductor plant up in Richardson, Texas, last year that the company expects will save $4 million a year in energy and water costs. None of these are things they initially wanted to do. Somebody talked to them and helped change their thinking and change their mind. That's tough love. And they did it because they knew that the vast majority of people, including the vast majority of people in all the corporations, are good, decent people who want to make a positive difference in the world. Now, I think the most effective organization at changing the thinking of large corporations, and certainly the most fearless that I know of, is probably the Rainforest Action Network. Their volunteers practice tough caring through civil disobedience, street theater, nonviolent protests, and a lot of very creative stuff. They scale buildings to drape them with banners that highlight the company's most blatant violations. They're trying to get their attention. They buy full-page newspaper ads. They write letters to the editors. And they're also careful never to harm people or property. But they're also witty. I'll tell you only one of their stories. This is one that I would love to have heard happen. It's when they took on Home Depot a decade ago, because Home Depot was clear-cutting tropical forests in rainforests for the wood. Home Depot in Atlanta was not the least bit interested in talking to them and would not schedule meetings with them. But then some employee of Home Depot leaked the security code for the intercom system in his store. And it turned out, see if this isn't a sign from God, it turned out that every store had the same code. You just can't not take advantage of that. So one day, some Rainforest Action Network volunteers punched in the code, and they announced, "Attention, Home Depot shoppers. There's a sale on wood in aisle 10. This wood was ripped from the Amazon. There may be blood on the floor. Please be careful. Cutting this wood is leading to the dislocation of indigenous communities, soil degradation, and the destruction of the earth. Sale on wood in aisle 10. Once they got their student allies organized, they could hit over 160 stores a day. The phones started ringing off the hook at the Home Depot headquarters in Atlanta. Then they wanted to talk. When they agreed to stop selling old-growth timber and wood from endangered forests, the other major lumber retailers, such as Lowe's, joined them. That's a huge victory for which we owe them thanks. Other corporations that have changed the practices because of pressure bought by the Rainforest Action Network include a lot of giants like Kinko's, Staples, Boise Cascade, Citigroup, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, McDonald's, and Goldman Sachs. These people are playing the Chinese student standing in front of the tanks. They're saying, "What you're doing is mean. Quit it." And afterwards, most people are grateful for it, and they thank them for it, because most people, including corporate executives, really do want to do the right thing. Sometimes it just takes someone to stand up and start them. Why am I telling you this in a short sermon that has to end within 2 minutes? Because I want to offer you a chance to play this game and to play this role. And I want to challenge you to play this role of tough caring right here in Austin, in ways that won't take you much time, that won't put you at hardly any risk, and that might be fun. Something very bad and tacky has been done here in town this week by the Hyde Park Baptist Church. It was a disgrace to any Christian and a disgrace to anyone who thinks that we are called to serve high and compassionate ideals and that it's mean to be tacky. At the last minute, they refused to allow the traditional interfaith Thanksgiving service run by the Austin Area Interreligious Ministries, AIM. They refused to allow them to use space, not even in their church, but in a gymnasium that they owned, because it finally dawned on them that interreligious meant that there were more than just Christians there, specifically Muslims. AIM had reserved the space in July. It took until this week for them to change their mind. And what this means is, and you can all figure this out, it means there was a nasty political fight among the leadership of Hyde Park Baptist Church in which a very small, very rigid group won and defined the whole church down to a very mean level. Well, this is when prophets need to come running in from the hills and start shouting. This is when honest religion absolutely must raise its voice to bad religion and say, in the name of everything that is good, in the name of God, in the name of goodness, in the name of compassion, you may not do this. You offend this entire community. You offend everyone of faith. And you have embarrassed the majority of the members in your own church who are far more decent than your leaders have let them appear to the community. Why don't you say it? This is an opportunity for you to write letters to the editor of the Austin American Statesman, telephone the church, Hyde Park Baptist, over and over and over. Come up with witty, clever ideas of your own, if you can find ways to do this. It is very important that those of us who say that we care about honest religion and about healthy values, that we find the means and the courage to speak out against horrid expressions of religion that disgrace everyone in this community. Certainly, they disgrace the vast majority of Baptists, of Christians, and of believers of any faith, and they give even more fuel to the kind of prophetic voices I talked to you about a while back from Christopher Hitchens and Dawkins and the rest of them who say religion is a force of evil and not a force of good. If you think it can be a force of good, raise your voice, make a phone call, write a letter, make a difference. That's tough love. Now, someday you may get a thank you from these people. I know most of them will thank you in their hearts, even if they don't have the nerve to say it out loud. But it's the kind of speaking out that we need to do. Now, if you can't do that, if that's too rough and that's not your style, okay. I don't need to guilt-induce you with this today. I've already tried. And if it didn't work, I'll quit. But then there's something else that you need to do if you don't want to do that. It's much easier, and it's also very, very important. I want you to think of at least two people whose words, whose presence, and whose actions have made a positive difference in your life. And I want you to thank them. In person, if you can, or by phone. No emails. That's my challenge to you this year. Let's make Thanksgiving a living holiday instead of just a hollow word. It's your move. Happy Thanksgiving.